92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I'm your host, Taylor, and today's live show is a roundtable, as we like to do from time to time. I've got two-thirds of the roundtable here and the third on their way from Cheney. As you probably know, it's Pride Month, and as you also know, if you're a regular listener of the show, I'm kind of cynical about months of observance. They're helpful. They're great. We can condense a lot of things into one month, but you know, LGBT issues and people don't end at the end of June. So that's why I'm doing it at the end of the month. And then, you know, we continue and have all kinds of guests on all the time. Just like when we talk about that during Black History Month, etc. So anyway, if you're a regular listener to the show, you know all of that. I'm going to let my first two guests introduce themselves and kind of the concept for the hours. We're going to do sort of a LGBT State of the Union for Spokane, Washington. So what's going on? What could be going on? What are folks working on? What are the hopes and dreams of people doing good work in this community? So hi to both of you. I don't know who wants to go first.
I guess I am.
Okay. So can you just introduce yourself, talk a little bit about who you are, where you're from, what your work is, et cetera?
Yeah, my name is June. I'm from the Tri-Cities, but I've lived in Spokane off and on for a while now. And I'm an artist, an educator, and sometimes organizer. And I currently teach art classes at WSU.
Nice. We can dig more into that and then...
Yeah, my name is Robbie Catherine Anthony. Most people in this town know me for my political efforts back in 2018 when I ran for county commissioner. At present, I'm working on a nonprofit called Solace. It's geared towards transgender individuals and giving them resources to have agency over their own transitions. And in between all that, I'm always creating businesses or other startups and just kind of having a presence everywhere.
Nice. So, and then we're going to be joined in just a minute by Chantel Jackson, also involved in education, also an artist. I kind of wanted to have a little bit of everybody here to talk about that. So I guess just to kick it off, I mean, I know my feelings about living in Spokane, which is a place that I think in terms of dominant culture could be considered very straight and very homogenous. I think the stereotype of Spokane is that it's very homogenous. Maybe we could just kick off by like, how is Spokane lately?
I mean, that's kind of a loaded question because no one wants to, you know, talk smack about their own hometown and things like that. But I definitely think there's room to have a conversation which we're critical about where we're at right now and where we could be. You know, in terms of the LGBT community, I think it's gotten a lot better from personal observation and other members of the community that to be LG and B in this town is pretty safe. Mm-hmm. To be T, to be transgender is not a good time whatsoever. And I think in lieu of what's occurred at the federal level in the last 2 years, some of that more vitriol and that hatred has kind of come out of the woodwork a bit more. There's more of an open license to discriminate and be less tolerant. So, you know, on one hand, we're seeing gains for the greater community, but on the other side, we're seeing a community that's being left further and further behind and left further and further in isolation. And there's not a lot of energy or zeal, in my observation, to do things that rectify that. I think people generally mean well. I just don't see a lot of the enthusiasm to help as one might suspect there would be when you're facing a crisis this big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to add anything in terms of how Spokane?
I think I would just jump off Robbie's point a little bit and say that it's a lot. I mean, historically, like, the trans community has been left behind in a lot of efforts and movements, and maybe like in some ways that's because it takes a lot more effort to like combat what is happening in a lot of ways. It's not just, you can't just have representation and have that be a solution. A simple solution takes a lot of
just because there's issues of like access and like policy and changing of people's understanding.
Yeah, it takes a lot more institutional change and institutional access to combat a lot of like the violence and discrimination for trans and like gender non-conforming people. Mm-hmm. Always.
Do either of you know, and I don't know, so it's fine if you don't either, of any places in terms of municipalities or just other cultures in general? Like, what are some good examples that we could look to if Spokane, Washington hears this and says, you know what, you're right, let's do it right now? What are some of the best examples, do you think, of communities that, like, what does it look like for a city, for instance, to like really support its trans community? And
well, it's already here, in my opinion, and it's not being applied to the trans community, but it is looking how people who are not trans are being treated. You know, I think people sometimes get stumped on what it is to be a good ally for the community. And it's just, in my humble opinion, it's treat us in conformity. Mm-hmm. You know, stop asking us to announce our pronouns at every meeting. You know, you've never had to do that if you were not trans throughout your whole life. Like, let's move forward. Let's stop referring to people and, you know, in just such a specific trans context. I've really enjoyed the vernacular as of lately, instead of saying trans woman, of saying like woman in transition. And so it's that kind of mentality. It's putting someone's manhood or womanhood or personhood first and just treating them like everyone else. And so, you know, the enigma of how do we help the trans community is that we recognize their identity and treat them as such. You know, it's not rocket science at this point. So maybe there is utopia in which they've cracked the code, but it's like, we've already done this as a society. Mm-hmm. We know how to treat people within their desired gender roles. Why not extend that to everyone? And I guess that'd be my take on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think kind of what I've been thinking about a lot too is sort of calling out a lot of empty gestures that I see happening. I mean, even places I've spent a lot of time in, like Seattle and Portland, you see signs that say like, we welcome all genders and all this and all that. But then right next to it, you still see a sign that says like, restroom is for customers only, right? Or the establishment for customers only. It doesn't take like a very critical intersectional approach. The same, like, a lot of trans people deal with poverty in that way. And it's a lot of these things are connected. So having like really grounded places and shelters is like a more viable gesture that we can make. If that makes sense. Like having a flag in a coffee shop is nice, right? Or having a sign on the door is nice. But if you like actually providing a tangible resource is sort of the next step that I feel like it needs to get taken in a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's moving beyond activism and into action. And I think people have a tendency to conflate those two, but they are very, very different. It's easy to show up for a protest for an hour. It's hard to create tangible resources for a community. And I think this community has been asking for a long time, can you help set us up infrastructure? And we've got a community that's complacent with saying, well, you know, I posted the trans flag emoji on Facebook. Doesn't that work? Doesn't that solve transphobia? And I'm just like, well, obviously not. But what can we do to actually kind of put some of our good intentions to the test and create something versus creating something that just gets a lot of likes on Instagram?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think your point about, you know, not having to buy something to be protected or seen. I think that a lot of the gains that have happened that people point to that are real in terms of representation and everything else have to do with, I mean, this is cynical, but companies and seeing a broader market that they can access, and that, you know, putting people first, as you said, means that like all people who need access to things get access to things. So yeah, that actually might transition really well into talking about your app, if you're
sure.
open to that.
Oh yeah, I'll never miss an opportunity to plug my own work.
Okay.
So I have been working on an app with my team for a little bit now. It's called Solace. And the charter of the app is to provide trans people with a accurate and comprehensive guide to transition, that they have all the accurate information in front of them. They can track their progress and move forward accordingly. Because at present, what's happening in this community is that it's something of a tradition of it's oral tradition to find like medical and legal information. And that is terrifying. And so, yeah, when you think about this, shouldn't there be a guidebook for transition? Shouldn't there be a manual for it? And when you start searching, there isn't. So what we're doing is we are compiling that information, vetting it, and making it really effective, and then making it accessible by virtue of technology. You know, smartphones and the internet is ubiquitous. You know, we've got, a 97% saturation rate in the United States. And so by open sourcing that information, allowing people to align it with their own goals, is going to help people be able to move forward through transition, which is the definitive, there's scientific consensus that treats gender dysphoria. And that can help, you know, stifle rates of depression, anxiety, and even the suicide rate within this community. So we're currently just trying to raise funds for it right now. You can do that by going to solace.lgbt and hitting that big old donate button, because apps are expensive, but this will be hopefully something that can really positively impact this community. It's doing something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's probably expensive because exactly what you just started to list off, like all the categories of resources to organize and vet and everything like that. So
that's exactly it. And I think sometimes people confuse app development with just write good code and it's all going to come together, but it is being accurate in that. Like take Wikipedia, for example, not a complicated technology, but all that information is incredibly expensive to source and it takes a lot of time. So we're kind of in a similar position, but yeah, we're getting there.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I want to welcome Chantel. Hi.
Hey.
Here, I'm turning you up right now. So just be right on that mic and I don't know if you'll know each other, Robbie, June, Chantel, you're all here.
Hey y'all.
So do you mind just introducing yourself and just talking a little bit about who you are, where you're from, what you do?
Yeah. So my name is Chantel Jackson, and I have been living in the Pacific Northwest for the past 14 years to work. I work out at EWU. I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. And yeah, I've been here. My plan was 3 years, but here I am 14 years later. In the community, I am pretty involved with visual arts and poetry here and there.
Nice. So we're just like kind of starting to kick into like State of the Union sort of in terms of LGBT life in Spokane. So I don't know if you have a first impression of that, just like how Spokane lately.
Well, it's interesting. Last year was the first year I went to the Pride Parade, and I saw so many queer folks that I was like, where are y'all the other 364 days of the year? And this year too, and I don't know if it's just that I'm a homebody, so I just don't know what the landscape is like, but I mean, yeah, it's Spokane. I don't know if that's like an answer, but
how Spokane? It's Spokane.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so I guess since you're here and you're at Eastern, and you're here, June, and you are teaching this, you're a recent student and now you're teaching. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm curious about state of like academia, how you both see it, like how are we doing and how are we not doing in terms of supporting LGBT students at all the levels. I know you're both at the university level, but I'm really curious about that. As a student, but just kind of a student who's not super visible and keeps my head down. So,
I would say that, I've been with Eastern for 14 years. And so I would say, we've come a long way, but that is not to suggest that there isn't a ways to go, right? Like there's still issues, there's still problematic, behaviors. And one of the common things that I hear is there are some like professionally faculty or staff refuse to use gender pronouns, and nowhere currently that I know of, I don't know how it works for all institutions, but there isn't a place to identify, like you have to identify by what is on your driver's license. But what a lot of students have to say about that is, I think one of the things is for an 18-year-old, a traditional college age student, if they are not out to their parents and their parents have a lot to do with the application process, mm-hmm. They don't feel empowered to say like, this is how I identify. This is my name. I know in our department, we have made some strides, in terms of giving students on our application, we ask what their preferred name is. And we also have a gender inclusive floor, again, which is not to suggest that we've solved the world's problems, mm-hmm. but it's to suggest that, like, we see it, we hear that students want more of an experience in a space, and so we have taken that into consideration. You know, we have a Pride Center, and, you know, students who are in the LGBTQ plus community have a place to be, have a place to go, and feel safe. But even being in Eastern Washington, like, identity is so, I would say the area that we lack in this area is really getting into intersection of identity. So what it is to be a Black queer, a brown queer versus a white queer, right? Like mm-hmm. that could be a different experience. That's again not to suggest that it's like that for everyone, but we don't have those conversations enough, I think. So that's kind of some of the landscape that I think about, talk about. And the biggest thing I hear students talk about is how can we identify on our applications or restroom spaces? Like, is it safe? Even though, you know, we can't tell anyone, like, you can't be in this restroom. Do we have protections in place for students to be safe and use the restrooms that they identify with, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and I would say we don't.
Yeah.
To jump off, because I really like what you said, and I think as an educator, I'm always trying to learn more about, like, how is it that we can fully sort of decolonize our teaching styles and our syllabus, and take a more intersectional approach to being there, protecting queer kids, but also, like, queer and trans kids of color, and like queer disabled kids, and kind of the full spectrum, and that, like, that can manifest in a lot of different ways. And I feel like I'm always learning and making mistakes and trying to, like, in some ways I've had to, like, kind of teach the workshops for whatever space I'm in or department.
Yeah, that was part of my question when you mentioned faculty, because I'm not trying to, like, call out any specific faculty or anything, but that's a pattern that I hear from a lot of folks. And I wouldn't say it's limited only to faculty. I think people's superiors at work, I hate that terminology, you know, people's bosses at work, et cetera, kind of either pleading ignorance or is that what's going on with faculty? Is it over aggression or is it a more undercover, like, I just don't know what to say anymore kind of attitude? Like, is it a lack of information or a lack of empathy or some combination of the two?
I mean, I find in my experience a lot of downplaying the situation. Like, I refuse to use your pronouns because I personally find that it doesn't matter is sort of like the dialogue I hear a lot. You know, like, oh, that doesn't affect you mentally, right? Or that doesn't affect how you exist in the space. That's something I see. So it's not really aggression. It's more of just a disbelief that it actually has an impact on a student or a fellow faculty member.
Yeah, and I would say that from what I've heard from students is really they're just traumatized with the idea that they've made an ask and it hasn't been given. Whether or not the faculty member is being malicious or aggressive, the impact of the student is what I think we're always most concerned about. And certainly some faculty members are just like, well, you know, I just, and some, I think it might be ignorance, but really it's hard to know because the student feels so traumatized by the lack of respect of, I've asked you to use this pronoun and for the third or fourth time you haven't done so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that might feel like aggression to them. It might feel like disrespect. It might, you know, it might feel a lot of different ways for that student.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm hosting a end of Pride Month roundtable, but, you know, not the end. I actually looked up, I was thinking about, like, oh, let's do a State of the Union, and I remembered that that is a thing in other cities to do a queer State of the Union, so we're, like, doing a miniature one right now. Also, Robbie, feel free to jump in on the academia stuff if you want, but I also want to, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, no, admittedly, I'm a little bit out of my depth in that conversation. So, cool. But I mean, all that's being said sounds pretty consistent with people in this community and their experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad that both of y'all are in there, you know, fighting the good fight, though. I mean, that's, you know, I think it's easy to overlook, you know, the day-to-day efforts that people put in. And it's just, it's absolutely commendable that we've got people in there trying to make a difference. And yeah, that's what change looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess the next one, I mean, these are alphabetical for some reason, even though I typed them manually, I guess that's how my brain works. But we have multiple artists and I think that you're involved in a lot of like cultural work and bringing people together, which I think is kind of its own art in a way. And coding is art.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you make an argument for that? So, I guess I'm wondering, I think that's where a lot of visibility work happens and a lot of representation work happens. So I don't know. What do y'all think? That's not a very like constructive question, but anything arts and culture that's popping out that we're doing good or we could do better.
I mean, I think during Pride Month, especially, you see a sincere effort to display that kind of art, you know, whether it's just kind of culturally a demonstration of people being together, you know, such as Pride, you know, seeing specific, you know, queer films, things like that. So it's definitely a positive that space is being made during the month. But I think to your point at the, you know, top of the hour, you know, queer existence is beyond the month of June. And so, yeah, I think kind of the way to look at this is kind of the one, giving people a chance for conformity. So allowing, you know, queer artists to be in parallel with non-queer artists, but also having those opportunities to highlight and showcase these contributions because it's a recognition that it took more energy to get to the same place. And I think that's where highlighting it is really important because it says, okay, you've been dealt a harder hand based on these circumstances. And that requires a special acknowledgement or just kind of more cognizant thought going into the experience. So yeah, it'd be great to see it more year round. But Yeah, we're a colorful community. I mean, it's that's kind of the benefit of it. You know, we get to paint with all the crayons in the box, which is a terrible metaphor, but I'm standing by it.
You have to melt them first, and then you can paint with them.
There we go. I finally feel understood.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I know y'all are trying to do, you are doing that. You're trying with Portal Collective, right? I mean.
Yeah.
It's, ish.
Yeah, ish. Yeah. I think the hope is to get there. I don't think it's like overtly stated, like, mm-hmm. oh, we're three queer artists, you know, doing this thing. But, you know, I think in a long-term goal sense, yes, like mm-hmm. we would want to create space for young queer artists in this area as long as I'm here. Like, I always, you know, think a generation back. And, you know, when we see inequities and disparities in certain communities, really that starts, you know, K through 8, right? So how are we as artists, as Portal even, reaching back to those generations to say, this is what's possible for you. You mm-hmm. can do this so that we have that representation here in this area mm-hmm. to continue to build that and to carry that on if those young people choose to stay here. Mm-hmm. But that's the dream. That's mm-hmm. the hope.
Yeah. Well, kind of what I meant is that you're not overtly leading with like, we're three queer artists working together, mm-hmm. but you are, and you're doing these shows together in kind of a sustained way. And that's almost a like flip side of what you were saying, Robbie. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Well,
all
yeah.
together, but
yeah. Cause it's not, I mean, we're, you know, we weren't tapped for anything for Pride Month, which is kind of cool in a way. I always have this, like this conviction about when I'm called upon, like to mm-hmm. use my talent. So if it's Black History Month, am I being called to do something. If it is, you know, Pride Month, am I being called on. Like I want to see if I'm called on, like all the other months, mm-hmm. not just the months in which
August.
My
yeah.
right, my identity is like, I want my work to be seen as like, oh, you are a creative in this way and we value you. Not, oh, you're a Black artist, can we use you for this mm-hmm. because you are Black and we need you, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it totally does. That's what, yeah, I kind of rambled awkwardly about that at the beginning of the hour of how like I do want to do a Pride show and I don't want to do a Pride show and I do want to do Black History Month content and I don't, and I yeah, so yeah. Yeah, what about you, other artist over here?
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a complicated relationship with queer representation and the art world, whether like nationally or locally. I think it's always great to carve out a space to have that representation in a gallery, right, or in an artistic community. And that gesture is always a well-meaning gesture. But I just always want to take a step further. And I always want to say, like, well, if you're putting together this show, like, who is curating it? Mm-hmm. Are you stepping down to let that, you know, whether what kind of show you're curating, are you stepping down to let that identity lead mm-hmm. And carve out space for that kind of work as well? I mean, we even see it with like the Whitney still struggles with this, right? If they're having their biennial and it's still a big panel of like straight white women who are curating what's supposed to be a radical show, but they're not giving up their positions to do so. And that's a very radical act. A lot of people still believe, but there's smaller ways to make similar gestures. And it's also boring. If you're a straight person curating a queer art show, it's going to be boring mm-hmm. because you're not letting more complicated work come through. It becomes a little bit more simplified mm-hmm. Or didactic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I always try my best to like kind of have that conversation of like, well, how are we making this a more complicated representation within this art sphere or more complicated dialogue that can happen?
Yeah. And does anybody have, I know you probably do, like go-to people, artists in any genre, any media, etc., who are doing that more complicated representation really well?
the new museum in New York mm-hmm. is doing that really well. They've sort of been led by a really great coalition of people. And it's, a lot of the things they've been doing lately are really radical.
Got anyone on deck? It's kind of a, yeah. Surprise question. I should be like, come up with all of these lists. I'm yeah. always like, because I don't have the lists on deck. So, yeah.
I don't have any like specific examples, but I think when I think of big cities, like other big cities, you're probably seeing spaces that are curated by the quote unquote like marginalized groups. I say marginalized because I'm just weird about that word, but because there is a concentration, so there are like residencies and fellowships for specific groups. I just don't know that here in Spokane we just have really like enough people or the infrastructure to make that happen. But I think of like in Brooklyn, there's like a Brooklyn Museum of Art that they specifically highlight black and brown art and artists. And I think that's really dope. So I think it exists other mm-hmm. places, but we're, you know, in Spokane that I think if you're from here and you've lived here, the sense that I get from some of the people that I've known over the years, they're like good. You know, they're good to be here. And they're mm-hmm. like, no, things are good. It's mm-hmm. great. We went to an art show.
Spokane, the home of the faux woke. Yeah.
Well, and I think the attitude here that I really hope can be marshaled, like my experience growing up here was really like, oh, a lot of the stuff that we want doesn't exist. And, you know, I think there has been a huge movement here to be like, I guess we have to build it. Like, I guess we have to make it exist. And I think that we're in kind of a weird, like, adolescent stage in this city. And it has the potential to go sideways in a really bad way. And in some ways, things have, just in terms of who's at the helm of those institutions and who's going to make the decisions. So, yeah.
And I think this year was the first year Terrain did a queer focus show and then the queer stage just last week. So I think that was an effort that, you know, maybe talks had been taking place and this year it happened. This was the first year for that. And so, I mean, that was really cool. Again, not to suggest that and it ends there. Mm-hmm. Like there's always more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I just think your point about intersectionality, like, can't be overstated enough times mm-hmm. that's really, like, every conversation that happens should be, like, who's missing from this conversation and, mm-hmm. like, why and how do we get them in the conversation, you know? So, yeah. So, in terms of, this one's kind of more literal, but and I guess I'm going to turn to Robbie somewhat because you ran for office, as you said, last year. So I guess just in terms of the like capital P politics realm, there's some things floating around. I know at the state level, they're talking about the X option on driver's licenses, which could be good for some of your students who have the, you know, ability to be out and independent from their parents and stuff. But yeah, what do you think is going on in that realm?
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you to run for office?
Sure. I guess we can start with the experience to run for office. Running as the first openly transgender individual for a county seat was, daunting. And, you know, being trans was not the biggest detriment to my campaign. It was being a Democrat and running in the county. that kneecapped us pretty hard. And we were running down ballot, so we were beholden to the top of the ticket contender, Lisa Brown. And, you know, it was tough. It was a great experience. I got to really kind of meet the heart and soul of this county and kind of see the best of it. You know, I like to make self-deprecating jokes about the area at times, but you know, when you meet the people that are here and they're loving and they're kind, it was extraordinary, but incredibly painful to lose. You know, people rummaging through your house, you know, you getting the nasty letters and packages in the mail and all that sort of stuff. That wasn't fun, you know, and kind of getting every awful thing in the book thrown at you. Because, you know, when you run for office, people don't think you're a human anymore. They think you're a character. And kind of over the last year, I've really kind of transformed into the shell of the character of who I am or who people want me to be versus my actual existence as a human being. And I'm happy to be the vessel for people's optimism. And I hope to run again. But that's one of the surprise taxes of running for office. You do lose yourself in the process because people lose you trying to project who they want you to be. But, you know, that kind of is what it is. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm not here to be in a position of power quite yet. Hopefully someday. But in terms of kind of what's going on in capital politics, you know, the federal level is not good. Not good at all, yeah. Especially for the trans community. They're getting just hit so hard every other day, it feels. The state level is a bit more interesting. You know, they say states are the laboratory for democracy, and that holds true. So our state legislature, we've got a trifecta of one party. So we've got the House and the Senate and the governorship all in one party, and we're pushing forward. You know, it's the most progressive state in the union, which is really exciting. So you do have the things like the X marker on the gender line of the driver's license. You do have things like next session that they're going to be finally banning trans panic and gay panic defense as any way to hold up, you know, as a defense in court, which is very, very good. Locally, we have a progressive city council, a less so mayor, but we have a chance to change that. I know I'm voting for Stuckert, and I hope other people do. He's kind of the best guy we've got for the job. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of the classical tale of any politics. The more rural you get, the more difficult it gets. So, you know, as long as we can continue to become a bastion of progress and a template for these other areas, I think that's doing the good work. So
right on.
Yeah.
Well, since you're not actively running, I think it's legal for me to say I hope to see you in formal power someday. I think that's an okay thing for me to say. I hope it is. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, talking with Robbie Catherine Anthony, Chantel Jackson, and June Sanders, just doing a State of the Union queer Spokane roundtable. And so we're moving into the last chunk of the show. And since this is a show about like action and changing things and how we make change, I'm kind of curious what's on the wish list? What's something that's going on or that you wish were going on locally, to support the LGBT community? Yeah. What do we want to see in the future?
I mean, seeing people showing up consistently would be really great to support the entire community. I think kind of what punctuates this month is the Drag Queen Story Hour protests. And you saw so many people get galvanized behind this hour too long protest for an art form, you know, a community that, you know, puts on performance, and that's all great and that's fine. It would be nice to see that applied to the other communities that need help. And that can be just specific LGBT. You could take a more broader context. But, you know, I think people are very well intentioned out here and they want to support the right people. And they want to get behind social change, but it really comes down to showing up. You know, it doesn't take a lot to be present. And when we kind of, my observation is people itemize what is the most exciting, high octane, high adrenaline thing that I can do to show that I'm supporting a community. Mm. And typically that is the least effective stuff you can do. Mm-hmm. Holding a sign is super fun. You know, chanting with people, super fun. Helping raise money for a nonprofit, not fun. Helping write grants, again, not fun, but that's kind of the work that matters. So I guess my wish for Spokane is that when they say they support the community in whatever community they're talking about, to be quite honest, they show up behind it, even when it's not a Instagrammable moment.
I mean, what's on my agenda right now, just kind of like what I'm trying to build is just more, I guess, fun community building events that I see in a lot of other areas that I want to bring here that I think just improve the quality of life for a lot of queer youth specifically. Looking like I'm talking to someone right now about like how to start an all gender swim event at like local pools, right? To kind of carve out those spaces, or a queer skateboarding night, or having more smaller events like clothing swaps. I think those are really important a lot for especially a lot of younger people without resources or don't feel like they have a part of a community or can't do things like go swimming or go to a skate park, mm-hmm. right? And that's sort of maybe one of the holes I see in the Spokane community that I'm trying to fill with some of my expertise. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of my agenda right now.
I don't know that I necessarily have an agenda. I think, I mean, like my pie in the sky dream is like, just let people live. I guess I just am always, I don't know why, but I'm just always shocked that there's such an investment and anger and hatred for something that has literally no impact on you whatsoever. Even if like that's what you believe, but also like handling that with grace, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's hard because I mean like I just want, you know, to be a part of a community that it's okay to be who you are on every, and that's, I mean, like, that's just so pie in the sky because I can think of like many communities in which that's just not a thing. You just can't, you know. So maybe more space for conversations across the table and a space for, not at the expense though of, you know, like queer folk mm-hmm. or people of color, but a space where people who really have like good intentions, who really want to try, who are maybe trepidatious about, you know, I don't understand this queer thing. I don't understand the pronouns. I don't understand the they, like who, mm-hmm. who is the they, them? What's that about? Mm-hmm. Like having space to break that down and have conversations and be handled with grace. But I don't think that I should be the one to do that, right?
Exactly.
Like, and I feel that way about race work too. Mm-hmm. Like, oftentimes I volunteer for it because I feel like I'm an expert, like being a black woman mm-hmm. all of my life mm-hmm. in America. Like, I feel like I'm an expert and I can speak to it the best. But in terms of like the emotional labor that mm-hmm. it costs, like, I just don't think that it should be at the expense of the LGBTQ plus community or the intersections of those communities. So how can we create space to have conversations and let people just be angry, mm-hmm. right? Like, because mm-hmm. I found just working with students, when you're challenged and you're having that emotional reaction, sometimes that's where the change comes in. Even though in the moment you're just like, you, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel that way. But then, you know, I've talked to students a year later, 2 years later, who are like, wow, that really changed the way that I thought about this or whatever. So are we allowing for that space for people to have conversations, but not at the expense of the emotional labor of, you know, someone who's in the LGBT community or the mm-hmm. intersection of another community.
Mm-hmm. And I would just build on that a little bit too, that the conversations are a really good place. I hope that in those spaces that people recognize that there needs to be action that follows through on it. Because mm-hmm. there's been a couple instances where I've met with people, I've made very direct asks in terms of how to be treated or, you know, how to kind of change, you know, the line of thinking. And, you know, we all get in, you know, relative consensus of what it's doing. And then someone just kind of like marinates in this intellectual curiosity of what is the point of the point. And that's where it gets really dangerous thinking, because it's, okay, we understand what we need to be doing. We understand the direct forward action. let's start with doing the action rather than trying mm-hmm. to go into like this metaphysical understanding mm-hmm. of the syntax of what mm-hmm. we said in that conversation. You know, I feel like it's there's this trapping of thinking that can occur so often that we go so far down the rabbit hole of discovery that we forget that it's actually meant to do something.
Uh-huh. Well, and it's really dehumanizing. And I think that kind of goes to what you were saying earlier, June, about people saying just like, oh, well, it doesn't affect you if I don't use the right pronouns or what have you, you know, that for some people, for people who aren't experiencing whatever type of oppression we're talking about, it's like a fun thought experiment almost, but it's like not. Fun.
Yeah, it's for some it's a dismissal, and then the other side of that horseshoe, if you will, is the fetishizing of oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, it's people playing dress up with it. People thinking, oh, wouldn't it be so fun if, you know, X, Y, or Z, or if I had a harder shtick in life, or if my story was crafted by the narrative that people are being implicitly harder on my own existence, mm-hmm. and that's not helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wants to be oppressed. And I think to your point earlier that place where people can just be people, you know, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think anyone who has been in these, you know, oppressed communities just wants to drop the prefix that, you know, follows them or trails them. It's just like, I just want to be a person. Mm-hmm. And there's just too much kind of out there of just, it feels like people get stuck in the mud of trying to turn it into some sort of academic conversation when mm-hmm. action is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would just add that, little moments can quickly stack up, right? If I know you're not going to respect, what I want to be called, it tells me that you are not going to stand up for me in a moment, or you are not going to like act the right way when you need to, when push comes to shove. And that can lead to people feeling unsafe, or violence actually happening because it'll be in a space where nobody believes it, even though it's mm-hmm. like a physical altercation happening. They mm-hmm. say like, you know, well, that person's identity isn't real, right? Mm-hmm. Or they put it upon themselves. And that is sort of like a product of that initial conversation of intellectualizing it instead of just saying like, you need to listen to what I'm saying, because it can lead down that path, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess just in the last couple minutes that we have, what are some existing actions, organizations, people that folks should either like get out their wallet or spend some time supporting locally or otherwise?
I mean, I'm happy to plug my own work yet again.
Yeah, go for it.
Solace, we're fundraising right now, trying to create a compendium for resources for trans people. Solace.lgbt. Doesn't take a lot to kick in. There's a lot of information there. Cool video. Just check it out. It's worth the 10 minutes and maybe considering opening up your wallet. But that's the one I'm focusing on.
In this way, I feel not like an imposter, but just I don't know a whole lot about specific organizations or nonprofits in Spokane. Also, I don't know like the politics of what's what. And mm-hmm. like, if I say this, is that wrong? I don't know. But what I will say to that is, being a part of the LGBTQ+ community or not, one of my favorite things to always say, like, Google is great. And so like, if you are really interested in doing work and opening up, like putting your money where your mouth is, you can research organizations and find out whether or not they're credible and if that's what you want your money to go to. Also, if you know someone personally who may be struggling, can you help them? Like, can you use your power? Can you use your privilege? Can you give up, like you talked about giving up seats, but in this very like personal way, like I have a LGBT, a friend who's in the community, and they're needing help, or I see that they're doing all this labor work. How can I compensate them for that? I think those are like real tangible ways, because I feel like even at work, I feel like y'all need to pay me for just for being in the room. So I think like that's one way. If you're not familiar, hop on Google, do some research.
Mm-hmm. What's that phrase that people are using these days? Lead with your wallet.
Yeah.
Like, give us money.
Yeah.
Pay us.
Yeah. You'll be disappointed when you see mine, but I will share what I can.
I think I have two different answers. My first go-to is always saying, you know, we still have a very large problem with violence against trans women of color in this country. So any way that you can support financially directly to a lot of trans women of color, or organizations that directly give resources and give support, not just gestures, but like mm-hmm. tangible things, any way you can do that is always, I find, the most immediate move, because that's the most immediate population mm-hmm. I think we need mm-hmm. to protect, because they're still being killed at alarming rates. Mm-hmm. But I think also on a smaller level, there's a myriad of ways that you can support, depending on like what you feel like you can do, and also the community you live in, right? I've spent a lot of time in really small towns, and usually like the only thing there is a PJALS. If people don't know, it's, wow, I forgot you the acronym.
Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane.
Not PJALS. I'm sorry. PFLAG.
What did you say? PFLAG. Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Yes. you know, like, in Moscow, Idaho, like, mm-hmm. PFLAG is the only really institutional organization that's there. So you can, if you're a parent, you can go volunteer there or help support programming or become like a surrogate parent or a mother. I've seen a lot of parents like being someone's mom in all these different ways for like a queer kid who doesn't have a supportive family. Mm-hmm. You know, I think financially or direct resources is the best option, but there's also a lot of just like small ways that you can just support people personally as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Oh, and the national trans hotline mm-hmm. is something that's been newly created that you can Google, and it's sort of, it directly supports people by giving a, I can't explain it fully, but like it's a hotline.
It's a hotline. Yeah. Well, I will use the Google, because Google is great, as you say, and also terrible, you know, great and terrible Google. But I'll put all of the links that we talked about in the podcast notes, and that will go up in hopefully just a couple hours here. And if you missed any part of the show and you want to catch it, you can find it anywhere that you look up podcasts, or you can go directly to kyrs.org/show/praxis, PRAXIS. I don't know if anyone has any last words, but should
we rate the show in the app store?
Yeah, that'd be great. Podcasts?
Maybe like a 5-star or something like that?
See, you're like on this stuff. I also just had an idea for an app where it's like all of the questions that someone else shouldn't have to put out the emotional labor to answer that you were afraid to ask. It needs a zippier name, but like an app for people who are well-meaning, but
let's do it.
Well-meaning, but ask too much.
Yes. Yeah. Well, great. Thank you all for your time and for everything you do. And yeah, for all of you listening, for listening. So yeah, that flew by, but, I'll be back next week with a new show. And then I've been pre-recording shows like mad for an absence that will last a good chunk of the summer. So stay tuned for that. And yeah, I'll be back next week. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. I